back to Matt Flynn, director. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. Before we get to the lines, there's a critical issue we have got to raise right now. You know, Liz Cheney is magnificent. She's very conservative, so you're not going to agree with everything she does or says, but she has stood up boldly to Trump, boldly to the big lie, boldly to creeping fascism in this country. And yesterday, she blasted Republican leaders, after that horrendous Buffalo shooting in Buffalo, New York, in a food store. 10 African Americans were shot and killed, and others were wounded by a white supremacist. And here's what Liz Cheney said. I've got to put this on the record. Liz Cheney, quote, House GOP leadership has enabled white nationalists. They've enabled white supremacy and anti-Semitism. History has taught us that what begins with words ends in far worse. GOP leaders must renounce and reject the views of white supremacists. Now, I'm going to say that again. That is magnificent. No one in either party has put it as well as Liz Cheney, and she was number three in the House leadership in the Republican Party. Here's what Liz Cheney just said, quote, House GOP leadership has enabled white nationalism, white supremacy, and anti-Semitism. History has taught us that what begins with words ends in far worse. GOP leaders must renounce and reject the views of those who hold them, that is the white supremacists. That is a damning indictment, and it is true. You start with Tucker Carlson. Now, is he in GOP leadership? Well, he's not elected. He's not elected, but sort of like a Rush Limbaugh. He defines the landscape, and people are afraid of him because if he blasts them, there's a percentage of the Republican primary base who then will turn on them. They will turn on them. And if you listen to him, everything he says is a code word. Everything he says spurs racial division in this country. But not just him. And, you know, not just, say, Trump or people, Gosar or Matt Gaetz. I'm talking about, how about Kevin McCarthy? How about Kevin McCarthy? Kevin McCarthy knows better. He's the guy, for instance, on January 6th who called Trump, said you got to stop it. He's the guy who said that Trump is dead after this. And then when the polls showed different, he went down and he groveled to Trump. He groveled to Trump. You enable it by silence, but when you were in a historically important position, the head of one of the parties in the House of Representatives, is not just silence, and he will occasionally say things that seems to give lip service to satisfy the base. And Liz Cheney called him out. Who do you think she was talking about in House GOP leadership? She said House GOP leadership. Duh. Well, that's Cheney and Scalise are the two main ones. House GOP leadership has enabled white nationalism, white supremacy, and anti-Semitism. History has taught us that what begins with words ends in far worse. GOP leaders, that's the House leadership, must renounce and reject these views and all of those who hold them. Magnificent. Absolutely magnificent about her own party. Doesn't pull any punches. Does not pull any punches. She said it like it is. She told it like it is. And we've come to a crossroads in this country right now. There's tremendous racial division. A lot of it sparked by what Trump said and did when he was president. And whatever his inner feelings about it, he's an opportunist and he just says it and does it. You have people like Lauren Boebert, Matt Gaetz, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Gymnasium Jim, GYM Jordan, Paul Gosar, Andy Biggs, Mo Brooks, a lot of people like that in the Republican Party what Kevin McCarthy is doing. He's afraid of them. He's afraid they won't vote for him for speaker. Duh. They're not going to vote for him for speaker anyway. What he better be careful of is that enough moderate Republicans don't listen to Liz Cheney and think, we're not voting for you either because you don't have a spine. You're not willing to get up, stand up to this. What the House GOP leadership is trying to do is to harvest the votes of white supremacists without explicitly endorsing them. And the question is, how far along the wink, wink line will they go and can they go? How far along the wink, wink line will they go and can they go? And let me tell you what, there have been over 200 mass shootings in this country by the middle of May. That's more than one a day. There was one right away after the other one. It was out in California at a church. Every day you pick up the paper, sometimes twice a day. No, you don't pick up the paper. You go online. A mass shooting. How does an 18-year-old get an AR-15? You know, when I was 18, when anybody's 18, you do reckless things because, you know, you think, first of all, you'll live forever. You're invulnerable. And secondly, you have very bad judgment. And I'm not saying you'd bring an AR-15 and shoot people in a grocery store, but you do a lot of crazy things. You're lucky you're alive, frankly. The stupid things you do when you're 18, and they're going to give them an AR-15? Why not restrict guns to people over 21? That would seem to be a very good idea. Very good idea. This clown posted on social media. He actually said that he wanted to, they gave him an essay. All the guys in his high school class, an essay. What are you going to do when you graduate? He said, I'm going to commit a murder-suicide. That's what he said. They called the cops. They brought in the cops. They brought in mental health. And they said, well, he's not crazy. Maybe he's 18, shooting his mouth off. They let him go. Well, he did do that, except he didn't commit suicide. He had a gun to his head. He was gonna. And they talked. I don't know why they talked him down, quite frankly. You know, you hear plenty of cases where a guy has an expired license plate and they kill him sitting in the car. And this guy just killed 10 people and is putting a gun to his head. I mean, why not shoot him, the cops? One cop did shoot him, security guard, great guy. Unfortunately, the guy was wearing body armor and it deflected. Okay, we're going to the lines. Dick of Madison, we'll start with you. What's in your mind today, Dick of Madison?
Well, exactly what you're talking about. There's no leadership in the Republican Party in my mind because anybody that is normal that's left has been stripped of leadership in the party. You know, I used to disagree with John McCain on a lot of things, but I could still respect him. I never disrespected it, certainly for his service, like the former, what's-his-name, Trump did. And then if you recall, during a debate with Obama, he corrected an older woman who, you know, started going on, well, I heard he was a Muslim. And he shut that down immediately. But there aren't any Republicans like that left. They're just not. I mean, you look at this Lise Toponik or whatever her name is, and then you look into her background. She used to be supposedly a mainstream Republican, you know, worked in W's cabinet or something along those lines. And look how she turned on a dime.
Right. Well, Toponik better be careful because Toponik took Liz Cheney's place. The Republicans threw out Liz Cheney because she was so honest and independent. And they put in Toponik, who's from northern New York, up in far north New York. I've been up there. It's a rural area, but you know something, it's New York. She's got to be careful. If she doesn't come right out and start opposing anti-Semitism and white supremacy, she ain't going to get reelected up there. And you know something, she's sucking along with Trump because she's pinching herself. She woke up, her eyes are shining, and suddenly she's the number three in the House. But she's simply a pawn. And she's in New York, you know, she's not in Alabama. So she had very well better come correct with some respect on this issue. Joe of Madison, my friend, thanks for calling. What's on your mind today, Joe?
Very important topics you're discussing. And I brought this up before on this station, but I think it's really important to emphasize. Probably one of the greatest Wisconsinites we've had is Lombardi, okay? And Lombardi, back in the 60s, led the country in terms of inclusion of black players on his team. He, in part, it was affected by the fact that when he was growing up as an Italian in New York, he faced great discrimination. Italians were discriminated at that time. In addition, he was one of the first to include gay players on his team and to say, you're not going to get any grief from me. If you're a good player, you're going to play on the team. And again, this was affected by his own personal experience. He had a brother that he loved very dearly that was gay. So think about those two things, the diversity that this man insisted upon back in the 60s in Green Bay, Wisconsin. He led us. He led us into inclusion by that team, which turned out to be, I mean, it's legendary. It's legendary in that sport, and because of this diverse group of people that they had. He even included this off the team. So there were restaurants, for example, that wouldn't serve his black players. He went to them and said, you don't serve my black players, my white players aren't coming in. He worked with real estate guys who were interested in working on fair housing laws in Wisconsin. So it just, you know, on the personal and on the political and on his work, he insisted upon diversity. And I think we need that message. This is a Wisconsin, something that is very, very important and something that makes us unique in terms of our progressive heritage. And it's shown in the Packer team. It's all about inclusion, and it makes a diversity makes us better. So I hope that people, when they think about Packers, when they think about this state, they think about the power of diversity and what's that has contributed to our history. Thanks a lot, Matt. I appreciate the opportunity to bring this up.
Yeah, thank you, Joe. Magnificent statement. And I got to tell you a little anecdote. My uncle Jack, my father's brother, was a classmate of Lombardi in Fordham University in 1936. And Lombardi, in those days, Fordham had a great football team, and they played Notre Dame to a scoreless tie. And Notre Dame had the other great team, and they had the Four Horsemen. You know, pestilence, famine, disease, and death, forget their names. And Lombardi was part of the line at Fordham that was a great defensive line. I forget if they were the seven blocks of granite or the seven mules or something. But my uncle knew him, and he was a magnificent guy. And as you say, he was for inclusion, and he also was they named the Lombardi Trophy after him, the Super Bowl trophy. We won the first two Super Bowls. So what a great testimonial. What a great statement. Thanks a lot for calling, Joe. We're going to a break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.